So these are children, and so we actually we didn't get a picture. It was in Qinghai, in Yushu, in China. In 2010, there was a big earthquake, and so there were many Tibetan people who died at that time. So one of my cousin brother, he lived in that earthquake zone, and he told me let's do something for victims, the children. And then so around 2011, we don't have picture here, my computer was broke down, so we started the Yushu Medical Institute for those children who want to learn the Tibetan Ayurvedic or Tibetan medicine. So at that time, or until today, we are cure every day, like around 40 to 80 patients come to clinic. And then now we have 24 students who are learning Tibetan medicine. So I think next year, or even after 2 years, they will be graduated, become a Tibetan doctors. And every year, there's many students are coming. So it seems like I'm just talking about how great I am, and I'm doing this and I'm doing that. I don't know. I feel that I spent this whole 20 years and 23 years in spiritual meditation, and those. And what I really believe is that for me it is here. What do you call that? For me, it is really my dharma. You call it dharma, na here. It really makes me happy when I can do anything. So this is anything for others. And I don't know, this is my teacher actually told, kind of, we learned this kind of meditation and advice that every day. Yeah, I mean, when I asked to many other masters, and my master asked, like, what is the most important practice that I should apply in my practice, my spiritual practice? And my master told me that the greatest practice that as a spiritual practitioner can apply is that every day is the last day of your life. And for me, I really live, I try to live, and I'm practicing that, try to live that every day as my last day of my life. So that it really, like, it makes me that I have to be useful, I have to be meaningful, that how I can be more useful for others, how I can be more benefit for others, how I can do anything in any way that I can help who need the really most help. So that is the way of how I live. And many people ask me that, are you doing to enlightenment, or going to pure land, or maybe I don't know, paradise, that you will be rewarded as in the paradise with lots of beautiful angels around you because you did many good things in your life. I don't know. I have a kind of my own spiritual that until today where I arrived from my understanding of this spiritual. I really don't expect anything about from my next life that I will get anything in a different world, and I'm even not expecting that I will be rewarded by what I'm doing. I would say every time. Even though while I'm here or anywhere, when I wake up, I think about my children's, now become more emotional when I talk about my children. So you really care, you know. When I was away for 3 years, 6 months, even though I asked my father and my relatives, my friends, to look after my children and whomever I have been helping. And even though I was in Tibet for 2 years, 6 months, every day I think about my children. How are they doing? Are they having good time or not? Are they sleep enough or not? So even so, I'm become now more emotional. So what I mean here is that really I'm doing for not for anyone. I'm not doing for my belief. I'm not doing for my next life. I'm just doing for, it makes me happy. Whenever that I'm useful or that I can do anything for other, even he or she is my friend or maybe who need help. And I would say that when I think about those children or those even I'm helping to many physical disabled, when I'm thinking about them, it gives me a great joy just to thinking about. And I have many plan about future, even though I have to live every day as my last life, a last day of life. But still, I have a better plan, better master plan to help maybe thousands of people. How can I help? Even though I live one more day, how I can be benefit? It is not important for me to really accomplish, but just to have that thought to helping. I think it's just already it makes me great joy. I would say at that moment of thinking to help other people, I'm in paradise. I'm in enlightened state. I'm in the Bodhisattva state. I would say it gives me a great joy. And yeah, just wanted to express that when you help other people, for me life is very beautiful. And so this is when I came back from Tibet, and I thought, okay, I mean, life is impermanent. You don't know how many days we have in our hand. I'm pretty sure all of us, we think tomorrow we will live. Do you understand? We have tomorrow. We have day after tomorrow. We have 5 days. We have at least 1 year or 2 years. So we all think maybe we will live until, I don't know, as long as we can live. But while I'm talking with you or while you're listening, I'm pretty sure, I don't know, thousands of people are dying in this moment. In some are very young. Some are even, I don't know, maybe inside the mother womb, they are dying. Some are just came birth, and some are 1 year old, 5, 10, in your age, my age. This is, we don't have control in our life. We can be anytime just. And when I came back from Tibet, I thought, okay, I want to be more useful. So then I started Bodhisattva in Action Foundation in Nepal to help more disabled people. And when I came back, and so it's very interesting, many people think that you start many projects, maybe you are very rich, or maybe you have a very rich people support you. Actually, it's very simple. When I started the first BIA Tanka, because in Nepal, many people need help. But then I think a lot about, I wanted to help those people who need the most help. So I try to, there are many INGO and NGO working in Nepal. But then I try to kind of investigate or try to understand who need the most help. And I found that the physical disabled people need the most help from my, study. And I choose the, I try to understand what they need help. And then we start a whole different program for different disabled. Some are blind, some are deaf, some are on the wheelchair, some are half paralyzed. So I started the Tanka Painting Institute in Nepal. Actually, the process was very, very simple. I start one of my friends from Hong Kong. So I asked her that I would like to start one project to help some of the wheelchair disabled. So can you help me? And she said, okay, I will help you. What can I help you? So my mother got a small house in Kathmandu. So I said, maybe I have to do a renovation for the, what do you call that, disabled friendly, to make a whole ramp and everything. So she helped me to renovate the whole house. And we started with the two disabled wheelchair, spinal injured. And then now we have 16 students in the Tanka Institute, where they learn how to paint and different deities. And so, and then I started the different BI Applic Institute, BI Statue, be it tailoring, pashmina, mobile repairing, and organic farm, and incense, and bamboo craft. And we are even supporting the HIV orphan in Kathmandu. So many people ask me, how did you do this all things? You know, like, how did you start this? As I told you, really, many people told me, you can do slowly. But for me, I'm very excited every day that, and I don't have time. I have to do everything quick, as much as possible. And I try to get help from my friends. Sometimes I travel a lot. I teach meditation, Buddhist philosophy and meditation in China or different part of the world. And whatever they give from the meditation, so I just go back and start a project, or some of my Chinese friend from Taito and Beijing, so they help me, and then I started to add more project and helping more people. So I just wanted to share some beautiful ideas. When I start to helping wheelchair and spinal injured, so there was a 12 blind people came, and they say, what can you do for us? And we want to also do something. And then we start the incense, because they can't see, so they can paint, and they can start other project. So because blind, they have a good sense in a smell sense. So we start to make an Indian incense and Tibetan incense, and now they are really good, and even they're selling. So we try to help them marketing as well. Many volunteers come. And the organic farm was also very interesting. Some deaf people came, and then because BIA, we try to broadcast in the radio and television and newspaper that if you are physically disabled, BIA is there for you. And the kind of, so everywhere, now people are calling one of my friends who is helping me. So I give his number. He's managing the project. So he got a lot of call from different able people. And then there was a deaf people, they came, and then because they're physically okay, they're not on the wheelchair, but they're not blind, but they are deaf. So for them, it's difficult to find a job. And so we start organic farm. And so we are trying to add more. We are planning for add more project for different able people to help more people. And there's a short video. Maybe I will just show you, and if it works. Do we have music? It's okay. You can play sound there. You can. It's okay. Just play from there. 不用 sound 了。 So this is short video where all the different able people are learning and different craft. So some of my friend came, did this short. So we have also tailoring institute. So here that they're doing bamboo craft. So they are on the wheelchair, so they are doing, they are making statue, and here he's blind, he's working with the bamboo. And also we are working with the many girls who are acid attract, so whole skin is burned by acid. So she, many, we have a beautiful sound, but today, I think. So it's a very short, just 1 minute, 1.5 minute. So they even make a statue, and then they even learn how to coloring it. And some people come to help from marketing. So here all the tailoring. This handprint from my children, all the kids, each and every kids, they make a handprint, and we made the logo out of it. Sorry? It's okay. So, it's okay. So, this is what we are doing in Nepal to help more physically disabled people. And we have a more plan for helping thousands of differently able or the physical disabled in Nepal. We go to next. Now just to what happened? Gone now. So, how I can check the time? Okay, I'm looking at, because it's interesting, in our monastic life, we don't have a concept of time. And we never celebrate a birthday, and we don't know when it's our birthday. And there was a very, I figured out later on that, and so we talk like hours and hours sometimes. So this was in Nepal, just a few months ago, Nepal media and many Nepalese people, they asked me to give a meditation there, and I just call it the secret meditation. And we help. And this is when I make a whole China tour, I think last year and this year, from all the way, the big seven cities I went and try to talk about Buddhist philosophy and my life, and so that they support my children, and so that's why. So this is this is in, I think, Malaysia. So a few days ago, I shared that in Vajrayana, in Tibetan Buddhism, we mostly practice with a vigil. So it's a, I didn't drink water. I was holding. Just share with you maybe some of practice that I've been practicing. Maybe, I don't know, it's maybe interested for you. That mostly, so we have different deities, like a Manjushri, which represent your wisdom. Our Lokiteshwaraya, we call it Chenrezig, which represent your compassion and loving kindness. And there's a green Tara, which represent your, what you call, potential, overcome all the obstacles. And there is so different deities, which represent different your potential, which you have already. So what we do, actually, so in front of you, there's thangka or statue, we put it there, and we just try to look at directly toward that deity. So we try to get that picture of deities, and we try to very, very carefully, each and every details of ornament and eye and nose and everything. So we try to scan to the subject, what you call mind. So sometimes it takes a long time, even months and year. So then what we do, actually, then we, at the same time, we try to close our eyes so that we get a picture on subjective level in a mind. So that is outside. So as soon as we get a picture inside, for example, just say our Lokiteshwaraya, which represents your compassion and loving kindness. So now I'm looking at our Lokiteshwaraya. So, and it depends. Sometimes you visualize so huge and giant our Lokiteshwaraya, that which is kind of limitless or boundless and full of compassion and joy and warm. So you visualize our Lokiteshwaraya while you chant our Lokiteshwaraya mantra, the Chinesic mantra. So you try to, so in a certain point, that which is the picture which you have in a subjective. So here is the observer, and here's the image. So in the beginning, it seems like there's an observer, and there's that image, or there's a whole our Lokiteshwaraya. And then slowly we try to merge that observer and that image. So, and in the end, so I myself become our Lokiteshwaraya. So there's no objective and subjective within the mind. So I become, I transform into our Lokiteshwaraya. And from there, I try to chant our Lokiteshwaraya mantra, and I try to, what do you call that, radiate that compassion and that loving kindness all over the universal, all over the, that what he calls sentient beings or the sixth realm or whomever suffering. So I try to radiate that positive energy to as much as possible. So there's a whole visualization. So at that moment, that you are not anymore in the physical. You are into that, in what you call the trance. So you are Avalokiteshvara. There's no different. You are enlightened Avalokiteshvara, the quality of compassion and loving kindness. And then after the radiation, so you try to go all the way, like a, become very small Avalokiteshvara, myself, and getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, and really like a kind of smallest, and you dissolve into that so-called, that greatest, which you activate that, the powerful compassion, loving kindness, so you try to dissolve into that, the greatest consciousness. So you try to put that whole blessing into that greater field, so that the whole unified, I learned that unified field here. So now it's coming back. So, I mean, like, into the greatest, that consciousness. And then, after a few seconds, sometimes minutes, sometimes hour, and you come back. When you come back, even though there's a great contribution to the greater that energy, but individually, actually you feel your heart become a more warmer. You become a more. I would say before meditate, maybe you are into kind of 1% compassion you have. So now after that, maybe you will have a kind of 2% or 1.5% compassion, that you feel warmer, you become a little bit more, because you get that Avalokiteshvara, Chenrezig, that compassion, loving kindness quality in your I would say your physiology, and as well as your mind. So then now you express that loving kindness in action. So one thing what I learned in my whole this actually I share with this morning I visited Maharishi school and I share with the children. And because they share with me about how was their experience in meditation, and they share with me they were in a bliss and they were in a peace and they were in this and that, so they had a great experience. And I share with those kids this morning that I also experienced many bliss and many joy and many, what you call that, great blessing through my meditation. But what I really believe is that it is not only enough to just you enjoy that bliss, you enjoy that happiness, you enjoy that peace. But I shared with those kids this morning, I hope they understood. And what I really believe is that it's more important if you feel joy and peace, that now you have to express that joy in your daily life. You express that bliss to help other people, or maybe smile to other people, or maybe, I don't know, like with your partners or with your friends or with your colleagues or with your environment, that you are nice, that bliss share with environment, the bliss share with your friends or stranger, whomever you met, at least to smile, so that that bliss can be transformed. So I would say this is one of, so here the picture that, I don't know, you see the one monk is meditating there, so while visualizing the Manjushri over there, which represent the your knowledge or wisdom which you have already. So this is how people trance in a Vajrayana. Can we go to the next stage? Next, I will just finish it, this one, and then we go for. I think we can just finish. So yeah, these things I'm sure you know about the. We talk about the six realm. So that big guy. Is me. And then there's a sixth realm that you experience, the sixth realm inside you. So we are. Sometimes there are different philosophies talk about different. Actually, that sixth realm is within yourself, within your psyche. So you are experiencing sometimes jealousy, sometimes very aggressive, and you become hit. You are in a kind of so-called lower realm, in a so we call it hell realm, which is not really existing hell, which is when you feel in angry, so you feel hot, and you feel, no? And then, so there's it expresses different emotions. So I'm sure you will see this in every monastery when you enter in Bhutan and Sikkim and in different part. And this is actually in Vajrayana Buddhism. This is the main principle that we play. So I don't have much time to explain those all principles, but just this is the most important that we play with. So in the center channel where we, every 13.5, when you take a breath, so that half breath will enter to the central channel, which create, I would say that, positive thoughts and positive things. So most of the actually, this is how in Tibetan meditation we explain our so-called mind or consciousness have to rely on our breath. So each breath that you are taking or we are taking, that from left and right inhaling, so it actually producing the different kind of energy, which is which all the thoughts that which we have every day. I don't know, I heard there's a kind of 40,000 thoughts every day from the psychology. So actually that it creates different kind of thoughts. But between every 13 and half breath, which enter to central channel, so which create a kind of, I would say, wisdom thought or the positive thought. I don't call it positive, but it's more like enlightened thoughts. So it's a very, very short time. And I don't know, did you notice when you see the masters, they are always try to put their finger here in that point where they were meditating with the white robe, even different masters, they always put here. So we try to block, because there's the three channel, actually it reached somewhere here, just maybe four finger below your navel, and it reached here. And then most of the time what happened, actually every 13 breath, it goes all the way here, and it goes down to the lower chakra. So which is, and then it creates all that very interesting thoughts which every day we face. And we have in Tibetan Buddhism meditation, we have a technique that we block that channel through the body posture. So there's seven different kind of body posture which block the different kind of the right and left channels, so that the each and every breath that goes toward the central channel, so that this is in Vajrayana traditional. If 24 hour each and every breath, if it enter to central channel, you're enlightened. So Buddha actually his each and every breath never went down after he's enlightened, or even many Milarepa and great masters, so that each and every breath he or she took, it went and then it went into the central channel. So that's why they have that 24-hour, all the blissful thoughts and that enlightened state of mind. So this is actually, can we go to the next? So this channel is actually here, the whole different deities. It is in our body, and then we experience, and different people experience in life, the intermediate state, life after death. There's a whole book of Tibetan, Book of Death, which is mostly playing with that right channel and left channel. And there's a lot of thoughts coming, and it distracts your mind, and it creates a different kind of emotions. So that will continue even the life after death. So you will, that whole things will repeating again in the state of Pardo, state of intermediate state. And even that time, there's a technique that how you can be enlightened in that moment. So just wanted to share. So here we have the flying Siddha. In Milarepa's tradition, we have, I met many yogis, they have been really flying as high as I also witnessed here, and I saw, I was very surprised, because in Karmakarji traditional, you don't really, actually he is from, I don't know, actually we don't show outside. It is very, we keep it very secret practice And even in Tibet, many people are flying. And yeah, I was very impressed when I saw some of great siddhas was when they were flying. And they, yeah, it's very beautiful. And so there's the similarity coming. So this is green Tara. It's beautiful, no? So, yeah, I think I finished my talk because I don't want to talk too much. And so if you have any question, you can please. So I hope I explain roughly about, because I don't want to go too much into that spiritual, because a few days ago I asked some people, like, what are you expecting on Monday evening? So some of you said about the your way of practicing. Some of you said, what about your life, how you grown up as a monk? And some of you said about your social work. So I tried to put everything together. I don't know, is it too much information or maybe less? Thank you. Please. Right. No, it was, I would say it was the kind of process that when you enter that, when you start that journey, so that slowly, that every day that you feel different, every day you feel progress. And in our traditional, we have to actually do 3 year, 3 month. So, yeah, when it time complete, I thought, okay, I'm finished, I'm coming back. So it was not about like after 3 years, 6 months that I was enlightened or liberate. It was just practicing for this 3 years. And when the time, so I came back to, yeah, serve, came back to. And I just wanted to add one that I've been doing social work, helping. And when I saw Maharishi's, his work here, it was, I would say it's really great that he had I visit a Pandit a few days ago. And I was so kind of admire, I was so happy that he had that great vision. And I would say that what he done in his lifetime on this planet, it is kind of unbelievable. And I really wish and I pray that at least maybe, you know, I can be, so I can follow his, what do you call, his steps, that I can also help those many people as he done in his life. So I'm very happy to witness that what he done here. And then, I mean, I never been in Holland and other places, but I can imagine. So I really wish that I'm also as useful, as meaningful, as helpful as Maharishi. Thank you. Do you have any, please?
Such a
it is quite very interesting that my journey when I was in Tibet visiting many great masters. And this morning, I think I shared with the senior or junior students that there was one yogi who was there in mountain for, I would say, many years, decades. And I asked him just as a joke, because we speak Tibetan and he speaks Tibetan. So I asked him you spent that many years in mountain. So why you're not coming down to the valley and then start to preaching, start to teaching? And interestingly, actually, he replied that, do you know that why people are still able to smile on the planet? Do you know why there is still little peace on our planet? It could destroy long time back. It could, we human are very easy to, he didn't say that we human are, I'm just adding here. And very easy to change or brainwashed at the same time. For example, when you look at back the history of all the different wars, First World War or Second, they were very normal kind, but next day they're holding a gun and killing people. They think it's very normal. Whatever. So what I mean here, he told me that those smile, that peace still we are experiencing on planet, actually he's also one of them who is dedicating that positive energy. It was, I would say, very interesting conversation with him, that he told me not only him that doing, for example, in meditating, that you meditate and then whatever left, that they try to, increase that positive energy in the greater level. And he told me there's many other great Mahasiddhas or great masters from different parts of the world. They are doing that meditation to make that world, to balance. If you talk from different language, this is what I'm adding now. From different language, I would say there's a kind of negative energy and there's positive energy. I would say give a picture of black and white colors. So there's even the horrible things happening in this world or our planet, that actually the dark energy is playing, I would say, we call it evil or ghost or whatever. But that, so here's all the meditation, this is how I understood from him, a kind of many great meditation master, that they're increasing that positive energy, which is kind of balancing that yin and yang. So that yang is not bigger than the yin, or yin is not bigger than the yang. So this is my understanding. But what he told me about, that he's also one of them who is making this world peace. And when I came here, it was so interesting. I come to learn about the coherence, and come to learn about that many thousands of people came here to create that, and 1% of population can create that nation peace. And I was quite surprised at what he told me, and then everything kind of make very much sense. So to answer your question, I would say there are many masters, I would say enlightened masters, who are living in different parts of the world. They are contributing a lot to this world, I would say, that little peace that which we are experiencing. Yeah, so just to answer your question. And yeah, I will try my best to do what I can. Do you have any more question? Please. Yeah, Sogyal Rinpoche, uh-huh. So, actually, Rinpoche simply means precious. And we have two titles. One is called Tulku, means reincarnation. So actually reincarnation happen in, if, for example, I was a meditation teacher or meditation master at that 14th, 15th century, and so at that time that I've been practicing as a meditation teacher or masters, so when you take a reincarnate, so you become a kind of tulku. So you have been practicing for many lifetime. You have been teaching as well. So then when you take a next life, so you come as a tulku. But then you have to go through this whole, sometimes they call it directly Rinpoche, but if you finish your this whole ritual and Kenpo decree, the whole philosophy, and then even, then you, people start to call you Rinpoche because you start to become a kind of precious. Rinpoche means precious jewel. So this is in our traditional, yeah. Yeah, so author Sogyal Rinpoche, he's from Nyingma traditional. And I never met him personally, but I know him and many others, masters. Do you have any more questions? Please. Their company? Yes. There are great joys, but we don't. We are not. Supposed to talk about the flying practice. I have to take a whole permission from my teachers. Thank you. It seems like I have a gift from Bill.
Well, on behalf of the community, we'd just like to give you some small expression of the knowledge that comes from Maharishi, our teacher, his very first popular comprehensive book, and the title says it all, The Science of Being and the Art of Living, is Maharishi's great book. So I think on your long travels, you might enjoy reading Maharishi's description of that same field of knowledge that you've been speaking of so marvelously. And then Maharishi found Dr. Tony Nader, MD, PhD, to be such a perfect embodiment of that knowledge of both, as you spoke of, the objective and the subjective worlds, Western science and the inner science. And so he felt, because of that great integration that Dr. Nader possessed, that he would be the appropriate person to really continue to lead his organization through time. In his tradition, we don't call him Rinpoche, but Maharaja Adiraj Rajaram is the man who's continuing this tradition. And what he's done, and we were talking some about this, just as you have located Avalokitesvara in you, what Maharaja has done is he's located everything in creation within the physiology. Everything in the Veda is within us. And so this book, The Veda and the Vedic Literature, Blueprint of the Human Physiology, really gives us that insight as to how the entire universe is located and where it is located within all the different organ systems and elements of the physiology. So this is another wonderful book that integrates modern science and ancient Vedic science. And this is, I think, a wonderful expression of Rinpoche is finishing his book on what he speaks of as outer religion and inner religion. And he can speak about that when he returns. I said when he returns, not if he returns. When he returns, perhaps he can bring that as his textbook for his course in Maharishi Vedic Science, Inner Religion and Outer Religion. And this collection of sayings called The Truth is One expresses from all those traditions, those inner traditions and outer traditions, that same knowledge as we find in Rig Veda. Truth is one. It is expressed in many ways, you know, and it's wonderful to hear those different expressions when they're spoken from a truly evolved soul like yourself from Pashe. So truth is one, and there's the book to prove it. So I think, do we want to finish with Green Tower?
No, that's okay.
No? Huh? No? Oh, yeah. Next time. Okay, very good. So thank you very much, everyone, for coming tonight. And Tashi Delek.